What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to a regular season edition of the Avalanche Morning, guys. We have officially made it. The first game of the regular season has come and gone. Opening night has hit, and there's a good amount to talk about from this 60 minutes alone. I am Bailey Curtis, joined today by Grant Foster and Gavin Oseguera, as always. And I mean, guys, let's just jump right into it. 4-1 win over the LA Kings to open the season out in LA before they head back home. Gavin, start with you. Lots to talk about from this game. Power play finally got on the board again. A little bit of a slow start, but things kind of started to pick up. Before we get into specifics, just overall thoughts.
Yeah, a little bit of rust in the first 10 minutes or so. I thought it was pretty whatever. The Kings were kind of doing what they wanted to do, which is incredibly boring hockey that they've been doing for their entire existence. And really, it just kind of opened up in a way when Manson opened up a human being with his shoulder. That's the best way I could possibly segue that.
That's a mental way of putting that.
Yeah, and then just nuked Warren Fogle. And that really energized the whole bench. I love the – did you guys see the reactions?
Oh, yeah. Parker Kelly on the bench is amazing.
Yeah, they're just absolutely wide-eyed. It was hilarious. But, yeah, that really energized the Avs. I thought the second line really started to drive some good play. You saw Gavin Brindley just flying around in the first half of the game. He was playing really well with that fourth line. Ultimately helps lead to the second goal of the night. But yeah, really, it was that second period where the Avs completely took over. And that's where Martin Etches for me just became the best player of this game. Right behind Cale Makar, or right in front of Cale Makar.
I was going to kind of mention that before throwing it over to Grant. If you're talking about stars of the game, I don't know who got it, actually. Let me take a look at that really quickly. It looks like Martin Netches did get first star of the game, followed by Nathan MacKinnon and Arturi Lehkonen. Two goals on the night for Martin Netches, one of which was that lone power play goal that the Avalanche had. For a guy who is on a contract year, this is exactly how I expected him to start things off. You're going to see strong play. You're going to see him vying for a very, very hefty contract in a market that is very slowly but surely starting to be set, especially with guys like Kyle Connor and Jack Eichel having just signed their long-term deals as well. So I think this is exactly what people should have expected from Martin Netches in the first game back. But Grant, just kind of overall thoughts. I mean, Martin Netches kind of leading the way game overall.
I mean, I don't know. I it's hard to, with MacKinnon getting two assists out there, to kind of say Martin Netches is the first star, or is the first star of the game, or the third star, however you want to put it. It confuses me sometimes. Martin Netches does have to put the puck in the net, but MacKinnon getting the pucks to him, except off the draw, he didn't do that one. But MacKinnon's ability to kind of, you know, control the game is amazing. I think this play that the Avalanche, they do it in bursts, but this play where you, especially on Natchez's goal, the first one, it's a pass from Makar right to Lecky, who bumps it just off to the side for Nathan MacKinnon to enter into the zone with speed. And normally you'd see from MacKinnon, he'd kind of stop and he'd kind of peel, like he'd stop at that dot and peel. This one, he actually went below the goal line, which is a refreshing sight to see, and find Netches for that goal, which I thought, which when looking back at the highlights, was really something really great to me. But man, Cale Makar, you know, he had some defensive lapses in that game, especially the Fiala one, or the Kempe one comes to mind, where Kempe kind of got that one-handed shot off. And sometimes, you know, he's so focused offensively that he doesn't stay defensively honest as he maybe should be. But I mean, that Arturi Lehkonen goal, I mean, I don't know if there's anybody else in the NHL who can make that move, especially faking that one timer and weaving through traffic like that.
Yeah, that was a thing of beauty, honestly. And Seth's Jeff Marlowe, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. Dude,
Jeff Malott.
Malott, yeah. Who did you know his brother's a UFC fighter? Did you hear about that?
I did.
That's been all over.
Did you hear about? Did you hear his older brother's a UFC fighter? Did you guys?
That's been all over social media. Yeah. Now, the Panthers game and the Rangers game weren't even highlights. It was more the hey, did you go know that this guy's brother fights in the UFC?
That's all right. We all know who the best team playing that night was.
I mean, obviously, he could use a couple more pointers, but
yeah,
that's just me.
But no, speaking of that part of the game, too, I feel like that's something that I would be remiss not to mention. Brant Clark, coward, straight up. Malott, respectable, honestly. Josh Manson kills a guy, and he steps up to the bell, and he immediately is called.
I like that Warren Fogle has been resigned to just a guy.
Yeah. Ah, whatever. He's done. Is that's negative aura points, as we say in the younger generation.
Oh my god.
And no, Christ. I like that he answered the call, honestly. It was respectable. He started screaming his head off a little bit, started to get a little out of control. And then I think I saw Landeskog just skate over to him, said like three words to him, and he was like, "Yeah, all right, I'm done." And just kind of skated over to the box. And then
Dad's here.
I didn't know that Manson was fighting, though. I thought he was still recovering from that wrist injury. I know it's been like a full year, but still, I mean, he didn't really fight him.
He kind of just like the other guy was throwing punches. And
you know, Malott's out there throwing punches, and Manson's just like, okay, down you go.
Yeah,
but it's almost more strenuous to kind of like pull someone off of you and put them on the ice, like with your wrist.
Yeah. But no, I loved the Avs. Really, the heart they showed in the entire game was really cool. That's something that I hadn't really seen from them in quite a few years. That level of just, I don't want to take any type of nonsense from anybody. And the Kings and the Avs have kind of always had a bad relationship. I kind of always noticed them getting into scrums. They seem to be a team that likes to push the boundaries a little bit, which, you know, they're respectable. But we're not the Maple Leafs. We're not the softest team in the league. So it's
I don't know.
It just didn't fly. And I really liked what I saw. Clark was cross-checking guys in the back all night. And then the time when someone actually chased him down, he just ran to the penalty box without saying anything to anybody. So
was it Manson who just absolutely flattened someone in front of the goal?
That was Clark. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Clark.
And I will right in front of chime him. In here and say Manson with a team high 6 hits.
Nice.
In this game. I have to go back and find this really quickly before I let you continue, Gavin. Let's see.
You were just cut off.
The most after that was 3 hits by Parker Kelly.
Kelly also had a great game. I want to credit him. Yeah. So, quite a lot of good heroics on the penalty kill as well. Credit to him. I liked a lot of what the Avalanche lineup had to bring. I liked a lot more players than I didn't like, and that's the best you can
do. That's always a good game.
Yeah, that's always a good game. Second line, great possession numbers. I think I was seeing stats about them. Absolutely fantastic. But unfortunately, just didn't get a lot of offense going, which is something they really need to start picking up.
It just felt like Brock Nelson was invisible. I mean, him and Nichushkin, even Landeskog to a certain extent, I just felt like they were invisible out there.
Brock Nelson highest ice time in the entire game.
Who, what?
Nelson. Yeah.
It's just like, because he's on both the penalty kill and the power play. But I just remember not like seeing Nelson do all that much. I mean, there was the power play opportunity where on the live stream I was losing my mind because he got the puck right in front of the net. There was no one around him, and he put like a half-assed shot towards the goalie and towards Kemper. And I'm like, dude, you had time, you had time.
And that is something I do credit Netches with. Like I remember for that first goal, I was saying the same thing. I'm like, why aren't you shooting it? And then he just rips it. So it's
that was a textbook wrist shot, by the way. That was like forearm punching out.
Just, yeah. Credit to TJ Oshie on the broadcast for breaking that down, by the way. That was pretty cool.
Who knew I'd actually like a guy on the broadcast?
Makes me sad though that TJ Oshie's retired. I still see him in a Caps uniform. I know he was big with the Blues too, but I see him in a Caps uniform every time I see him.
That's fair enough.
I think Something to point out here, while we still kind of overview in talking about players we liked versus didn't like, do want to point out some key roster points. If you had told me 3-4 weeks ago that Gavin Brindley would be on the starting roster for the Colorado Avalanche, good grief.
Hello?
Good grief. If you had told me. I was just talking with my former co-host earlier. That's why I'm in like a whoa. No, if you had told me 3-4 weeks ago that Gavin Brindley would be on the starting lineup for the Colorado Avalanche, I would have told you kindly that you were insane. When this trade happened, it was more so me not really having much of a clue of who Gavin Brindley was, doing my research and realizing he'd be a great addition to this Colorado Eagles team up in Loveland. Looking at what he's been able to show off through a couple days of training camp, through 5 games of the preseason, I am thoroughly impressed and am not as shocked now as I would have been to see him here, proving that he's got an opportunity to show what kind of player he is. And I really think he's fought his way onto this roster. There's a very solid reason why Jared Bednar kind of sees the opportunity here. And I don't think it exactly has to do with nepotism as, oh gosh, I need to go back and find the tweet, yeah. But you know what I'm talking about. Yes.
The broadcaster said that word for word on the actual NHL thing. He was like literally reading that tweet on the game. And I was like, yep, yeah, I know what you're about to say. So that was funny.
Yeah. So it was Bednar playing with his dad.
Yeah. Ryan Brindley is his name.
Yeah. So, which is really cool to think about now. Now Bednar is coaching his kid.
Yeah.
Here in the NHL. So that's a cool little full circle moment for this organization. Gavin Brindley earning his spot on this roster. Not sure it's going to stay that way. There's still some time to sort out rosters and figure things out. But with Brindley making the starting roster, somebody had to get healthy scratched. And that guy, unfortunately, was Zakhar Barkov, who has basically been given, or at least assumedly was given, that 4C role. Bednar decided to scratch him a little bit, and given some of the discipline that he's still kind of working on curbing, I understand why, because this is a game that was really controlled by penalties, especially in the third period. That's one less guy you have to worry about potentially pulling the rug from underneath your team. With that said, Parker Kelly did get that 4C spot, which, while I do understand Barkov being scratched, was a little surprising to me, given how much Bednar was kind of mentioning that he really liked Parker Kelly on the wing. But when it comes down to scratches, if you're trying to give a guy like Gavin Brindley his shot, that's unfortunately the luck of the draw at that point. I didn't think Brindley was that bad. He didn't get a lot of ice time, I will preface with that. Just with special teams already being set. But from the, I believe it was 6 minutes that we saw, 7 minutes, 50 seconds that we saw from Gavin Brindley on the ice. Grant, I'll start with you. What did you kind of see? What are your kind of overall thoughts there?
He drew a penalty, and that's pretty much all I remember about Gavin Brindley.
He's got my stamp of approval.
He's got, I mean, Bailey's a sucker for third liners and fourth liners while I'm kind of, you know, trying to.
That is not what you said on the live stream, actually.
Sorry. You're a sucker for prospects and players who make underneath $4 million on the cap. I mean, he was fine, you know. I think he was the lowest guy ice time wise on the team. And that's just because, like, yeah, especially in that third period where it was just penalty after penalty after penalty after penalty against the Avalanche, you know, he's not a penalty killer. Like, that's not what you want him to do. That's not what he's going to evolve into as a player to do. And really, you know, it's just kind of makes him a little forgettable out there, in all honesty.
Yeah, Gavin.
yeah, I really liked – I liked the game he did play. Obviously, did have the lowest ice time of the team. He's not on the penalty kill, so that kind of makes sense. But I thought it was a good showing for the guy. Really, I think – I don't think it's beneficial, like, long-term to keep Gavin Brindley on the fourth line. I think that's a waste of his development. Mm-hmm. I would prefer, like, if you are going to have him on the team, be on that third line, which does bring into question the battle with him and Victor Olofsson, which is seemingly kind of becoming one of the biggest roster questions right now because Gavin Brindley has played so well. And you also have Logan O'Connor coming in as well to just guaranteed take a spot. So it's one of the better, like, roster struggles that the Avs have had in recent years where they have so much talent to choose from. It's not mm-hmm. like I have 12 AHL guys and I hate all of them. No, it's
right.
It's a good problem to have with the Avalanche. I really like Gavin Brindley. Factually has the best first name in the NHL. Also has a lot of good ability to forecheck. Did I say something correct?
Yeah.
Did I say something correct?
Incorrect.
Yes, you did say something incorrect.
Oh, okay.
There's another G name here who would like a word.
No, I don't even think my name. I don't think my name should be up there. If you're naming your kid Grant, that's because you hate him.
Jeez.
Whoa. Anyway.
But, yeah, no, I think Brindley was really good on that forecheck, led directly to the second goal by Sam Malinsky, who also had a great night, by the way. A guy that I was really critical of in the preseason had a pretty great game, first game of the season. Has that goal. The one benefit of being on your offhand is that you do get to cut to the middle of the ice on your forehand, and Malinsky saw that. So, he saw the benefits of it. His defensive lapses really weren't all that bad either. So I'm liking Sam Malinsky. It still does leave him as the odd man out, unfortunately. So it's a tough situation right now. But he's definitely, for the first game at least, stepping up to the call. Bartikoff didn't play in the game, like you said. I don't like Parker Kelly 4C. I think he's imprisoned when he's in that position. Mm-hmm. I would prefer him to be on wing. I get why he was scratched. It's mostly to get your NHL veterans a full look, and they also wanted to credit Gavin Brindley with a roster spot. But realistically, going forward, Bartikoff is your 4C and is really your almost Jack Jury insurance in case he doesn't work out as 3C. He's kind of that. Like, if you can make him into a good 4C, Jack Jury kind of becomes a bit of a trade piece for a real 3C. It could be that type of situation, but it's Bartikoff definitely, because he plays center, is going to get into more games. They just wanted to give mostly Kivi Ranta an actual look at a first NHL game. It's not just like doing right by your veterans. He's also great on the penalty kill, like we saw. He's a reliable defensive guy. And that fourth line honestly didn't get scored on at all. So that's a credit to that roster decision. I think going forward, though, if Gavin Brindley does want to get in the lineup and have Bartikoff in the lineup, you are looking at scratching a guy like Kivi Ranta to make it work. But with Brindley, during the course of the game, seeing him fly around, I was mm-hmm. really hoping he would get on that third line instead of just take Victor Olofsson off of it, because that line was kind of pedestrian. It wasn't creating a lot.
Yep.
Gavin Brindley was creating a lot of chaos. I think he's a better version of Miles Wood, a guy who's fast, has good skating, has something called IQ into his game.
Yeah, but he's not 6'3".
No, he's not 6'3".
He's not 6'3", 212.
He plays like he's 6'3", though, which I think is incredible.
That doesn't mean
it does, because where is Miles Wood?
Miles Wood is on the Columbus Blue Jackets,
exactly. Who are probably going to be vying for a playoff position. But
not before they trade him out of somewhere else, because that is a horrible contract. The worst problem about it, though, is he is 5'9". So, but playing next to a guy like Jury and Ross Colton, who I think would benefit greatly for having a guy like that.
I think so as well.
That's a combination I really want to see. But yeah, I'll throw it over to you guys, because I want to get into a tangent about Victor Olofsson and
I could not be further opposite from you. I don't think Gavin Brindley deserves it. I don't want him in the lineup in the foreseeable future. I don't want him in the lineup.
You don't think so?
You might. I don't think you're there. I think when there's injuries, 100% slot him in. Because we know this team is going to get injuries at some point, so we're going to have him play there. If this team's fully healthy, I don't want him sniffing the roster. I don't like I don't like how, because Bednar's done this with a couple guys now. Oh my God, Kyle Schwarber just hit a home run.
Grant, hockey, focus.
I don't like this because Bednar is never able to use the talent that he has in front of him to help them excel. I don't think Casey Middlestad was all that bad of a center. I think I don't think he was as great as we touted him to be, but I don't think he was that bad of a center. Victor Olofsson is another iteration of Casey Middlestad where Bednar needs to do some real coaching here and figure out how to best situate him for what he can do other than just sticking him on the power play. I think he should be on the power play one. We'll get to that later. But I think as a coach, you need to get the best out of your players. And I don't think Bednar has done that, is doing that with Victor Olofsson. Now it's been one game. We're not even a month into the season, but bad habits start now. Everything starts now if you're a team who's trying to win a division, be in the playoffs, and make it deep. Victor Olofsson is a different style of player. I do want Jack Drury to not just be this completely defensive type of player because he's got Ross Colton on his line, who's a very good forechecker, very defensively minded. Either Ross Colton or Jack Drury, more so looking at Ross Colton, because you do make $4 million in the cap and you're a third line wing. You need to be the guy who is going to be a playmaker of this line. Every line, except for the McKinnon, Natchez, Lehkonen one, has to have a guy who's defensively minded, a playmaker, and a goal scorer. They don't have to strictly stick in their roles. But that role-esque type of thing has to be there. And I need to see either Jack Drury or Ross Colton step up their game. And that, in turn, will help Victor Olofsson become more accustomed to the lineup. And Gavin Brindley's great. If there's injuries, thank you very much. We need you. But the fact is that you can't play center. If you can't play center, that makes you less valuable. Barkov can play center. Even though I think Kelly should stick there, and I think we should have a full team of veterans and not really taking shots on prospects unless there's injuries. And, I your argument is very valid, and I like it, but I just don't like it for the fact that we're trying to put out the best team each and every night to win as many games as possible. And do we really have time to give guys like Barkov and Brindley a shot when most of the team is healthy? I don't know.
Yes, if that means you're getting the best out of a guy like Parker Kelly, who's a veteran on your
line. I think so.
But I would say Parker Kelly is better with, because you can throw him on the penalty kill. You're going to have to teach Barkov or Brindley to be on the penalty kill because Nelson, right now on the penalty kill, you have Nelson, Nichushkin, Lehkonen, Drury, Colton, Kelly, and Kiviranta. So if we're taking off Kiviranta and we're putting Kelly on the wing, that's six guys. Realistically, you want as many guys as possible to be on the penalty kill. You can kind of take Nichushkin off that, because I think they did take Nichushkin off the penalty kill. But
you wouldn't really have to scratch any one of those guys. You would get obviously Logan O'Connor back, and then you'd have a real conversation about what you do with Barkov. And then you're talking about scratching a Kiviranta for a Logan O'Connor. But you would still have Barkov being viable on the penalty kill, which he has been at least in preseason and through all of camp. So he's a great option to have as a fourth line center, especially since it frees up other guys like Kelly to be even better in their games. Mm-hmm. Brindley, though, I do agree. Like, I think unless he's like seriously kicking the door down to the NHL, there's kind of no place for him on the roster. But and a guy like Victor Olofsson should have a lot of time to really settle in, and we have seen it before. Like they've gotten
quality players,
guys, from guys who aren't the best defensively and aren't like Bednar's favorite, like Andre Burakovsky, not a great defensive player, was scratched a few times, but ultimately they found out how to get juice from his game. And I think the same thing will happen with Victor Olofsson here, and he'll have plenty of time to get acclimated to the way the Avs play, because the way the Avs play is incredibly different from a lot of teams in the NHL. But I also think with Victor Olofsson, it's like the clock is ticking, because you do have a Gavin Brindley playing phenomenally. So I think that's some extra motivation there for a guy like that, but it's also some insurance in case Victor Olofsson really just can't fit the way that the Avalanche play.
Yeah, I still think that's a coaching decision personally, because I think Victor Olofsson is the perfect thing that you need on the first power play. I think Brock Nelson should be there.
I think so too, but honestly, we're not the coach. That's Jared Bednar, and for this season at least, he's still the coach.
If Dave Haxall is the one running the power play, and let's talk about it. You know, 1-for-6 on the power play. Nelson is out of his depth here. Except for being on the faceoff, he does not fit that bumper very well on the top power play. He's not a guy who rips it home.
Yeah, the random spot.
Yeah, and honestly, I was on the live stream with Bailey. I was talking about this. On the second power play, at least the one they ran, there was two ones. They ran one with Taves out there and one with Taves not there. But you had Landeskog, Nichushkin, Olofsson. Who was the last one? It was Colton, Landeskog, Nichushkin, Olofsson. I'm blanking on somebody. Whatever. And you had Landeskog taking the draws, and you had Burns quarterbacking it. And I looked at that, and I was like, there's no one there to move the puck. And I'm looking at Brock Nelson up on the top penalty or power play, and I'm thinking, that's you, dude. You should be there. Mm-hmm. We don't need you to be the playmaking guy on the top one. We need you to score. You know, that's what that bumper was. The whole system was when Mikko Rantanen was there, was that Mikko Rantanen and MacKinnon are the ones who are going to score. Makar's going to facilitate, and MacKinnon might throw in some playmaking ability here and there. But I'm looking at Brock Nelson. I'm saying, dude, you do not need to be on that top power play.
Yeah,
it's not a knock to be on the second power play, because we're going to need to use the second power play at times, but you should not be there. That's not your spot.
I agree. And I kind of want to transition into the power play in general and talk about what I really liked from it. The first one was Necas's deployment. I loved how they were using him as kind of like what you were talking about, Grant, kind of just like deploy him everywhere. He was either in MacKinnon's spot at times, and MacKinnon was below the goal line, which I'm really glad that they're experimenting with, led to some pretty good chances. You got Necas will take the below the goal line position and work from there. He would either play catch with Makar at the point. They would kind of just hang back together, or he would go on the right side and also do the same thing with Nelson. I really liked his deployment. I think for a guy like that too, with his skating, it kind of is not the best decision to have him just plant his feet and be a stagnant position as well. Like, you already have that with MacKinnon, who can kind of move freely in his spot, but when you plant Necas next to him on that half wall thing and say this is where you're staying only, I think that really inhibits a player like that. But I liked, and that kind of also covered MacKinnon as well. Obviously Makar is your power play quarterback, but yeah, I think the biggest controversies are those that Brock Nelson and where Arturi Lehkonen is right now, so net front and that right side threat. Really, obviously Victor Olofsson is there. He's who should be there. I think he's probably the best pure sniper you have on the team right now, at least on that right side. And he's going to shoot. Like, he's a decent playmaker. There's nothing to write home about, but he's not incompetent. He's not Miles Wood.
He had a couple moments where I was like, I didn't, he was kind of one of those players for me in last night's game that was kind of wishy-washy.
Yeah,
have some bad moments, but he did make some good plays. I think he had a really good, I forget which period it was, but I remember him breaking into the zone and I'm like, and getting an immediate shot off. And I'm like, okay, I like this.
There's a lot of potential there. I think he definitely could benefit from playing on the rush a little bit more, just getting acclimated to the AV system. But I think if you want to get the full value from this contract, put him on your power play. I think you'll get a lot of the best of that player. And then simply, I mentioned it before, get Arturi Lehkonen off the power play. Stop doing what lost the Avs the power play in the game 7 series against Dallas. It didn't work then, because Arturi Lehkonen, I love the guy. He's 5'11". He's not the biggest. And when you need a net front presence who can reliably muscle his way and tip pucks, Arturi Lehkonen is not the best in that department. And he doesn't have the best shot. He can bury it, but he just... There are guys here like Brock Nelson who would be way, way better if you moved him at net front, which is what he's done his whole career.
Or Landeskog.
or Landeskog or Nichushkin, who's also there. You have
A plethora of options.
You have so many better options than Lekkonen. And I love Lekki, but like,
I think Lekkonen's goal last night was a perfect example of why he is one of the best 5-on-5 players that the Avalanche have. He's a guy who is not afraid to get down and dirty and gritty in front of the goal.
Sneaks and around into good positions too.
That's not exactly the role that you're looking for on the power play. You're looking for a guy who can maintain possession and maybe tip a puck every now and again in front of the goal. You're not looking for grit on the power play. That's not necessary.
I think you are looking for grit, but there's more in Nichushkin. Yeah.
Yeah, there's more Nichushkin than there is
in Lekki. Not in the way that Lekki brings it.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Not in the way that Lekki brings it. I think you're looking more so if you're looking to like get pucks on net and maintain possession in the zone, I think is something the Abs really need to focus on. That's something that they really struggled with deploying multiple units during the preseason. I think you saw a little bit better of an iteration of it during this game. Obviously, you've got a full unit. You know kind of more or less what that's going to look like in 10 games, 20 games from now. But I think Lekkonen is better utilized in a 5-on-5 situation rather than on the man advantage.
Yeah, or the penalty kill, because I love that guy on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
I will say strategically with the power play, one thing that really burnt the Avalanche last year, and it's becoming a more mainstay thing across the NHL, is a lot of these teams on the penalty kill, they're running three high, one low, where they're eliminating your options. So if you were watching the power play, and if you didn't catch the game, go back and watch it. But the power play, you know, they've got three guys pushing high on Makar. They had three guys pushing high with Makar, Mackinnon, and Nelson kind of, you know, formulating that triangle at the top. And I like the Avalanche's ability to kind of put Mackinnon down lower, see how he can kind of manipulate his way down there, because that was famously the Mikko Rantanen area, kind of trying to find those seam passes. But that's similar to what the Dallas Stars did in the playoffs last year, and I like that at least we're, you know, opening our eyes up to what's happening in these games, where we're saying, okay, if we're going to start to eliminate the threat of using Makar as the guy to manage the puck from the point, I would almost like to see maybe a variation where we use Natchez or Mackinnon to kind of quarterback the power play from below the goal, kind of give a different look. That way, you know, it's not all on Makar to kind of, you know, face one-on-one pressure the whole time. And Makar can do that, but it's asking more of him than you probably should. And I don't know. I really like that Mackinnon was being used lower, trying to find seam passes. I remember the one he was coming up Darcy Kemper's left side, and Lekkonen's cutting towards the goal across, and he's trying to feather a saucer over to him for the goal. And I like seeing those things,
right?
Or these different looks that we're getting out of this power play so far. Execution needs to be there, but I like the creativity more than just Makar is going to be quarterback and I'm trying to find seams and everything.
I think you're right about that, because you compare it to last season's first game and the Avs could only score on the power play. That was their thing. Rantanen had his hat trick. It would have been horrible if Net just got his hat trick. That would be poetry.
Oh, that game would have been so poetic.
It would have been. But and then proceeded not to sign with the Avalanche. But that would be even worse. The curse. Endlessly. Endlessly keep trading for guys on their last year contract.
I'm most scared of David Pastrnak
from the Boston Bruins. Trade Natchez for David Pastrnak.
Yeah, they'll take that, I'm sure. Why not?
I'm so scared.
And the rights to the Bruins. Why not?
Who knows?
Of course they would take that deal.
The Bruins have done stupider things. They gave away Brian Marchand for a 7th-round pick.
That is true. At least you're not.
I am so terrified that is going to become Martin Natchez's legacy.
I don't
bridge deals and trades.
But I don't want to get so side tangented, but
no, I know. I wanted to kind of anyway.
I think but when you look at the different shades of how the power play worked, there was definitely a lot of creativity. You don't want it to be solely power play, but you also want to get it figured out. I think compared to the power plays you saw in the the final series against the Dallas Stars. Like, this is much better. Like, if you gave me the option between choose a power play that doesn't score and I had the option, I would choose this one, because at least they're not looking completely lethargic. They can barely gain the zone. There's like no puck movement at all. Like, I like the movement of this one. They're able to whip the puck around. They're able to start plays. They probably would have had an absolute beautiful goal if Drew Doughty didn't make a great blocking play, because they just had that. I remember it was that one power play. Nelson tried to pass it over to Necas, I believe. They had that system completely dismantled, and Drew Doughty says no. And you're like, well, there goes that goal. And then there also goes the other goal to the ref called for no reason for being offsides, even though it clearly wasn't. You guys remember that one? That was
fun. No, I remember that. That was a bad goal.
That was so bad.
Talk about legacies upcoming for the Avalanche.
Yeah.
That was the Lecky saving it at the blue line, wasn't it?
That was. Yeah. That wasn't even. It didn't even touch the blue. I watched it back.
That was a first game of the season call right there.
Bad. It's like, if you're a ref, like, if you think, oh, was that offsides? Was it right on the line? Let the play go. If there's a goal, you can review it. Like, I don't understand.
Well, that was stopping play. That was TJ Luxmore, famous Avalanche referee, where he let
was Benson it Luxmore?
One, oh, which, yeah, that was TJ Luxmore in that
oh,
game.
Oh no, that makes sense.
I mean, he's not the guy. He's not the linesman. He's not the guy make it. He's not the guy. But that's his influence on the referees. Yeah,
the Kings paid off the refs with their.
He's influencing. He's on Instagram telling them, this is what you gotta call. This is the call.
This is the call. If you see the goalie get ran, wait 30 seconds to call it dead.
Yeah. Let the guy writhe in pain in the crease. Yeah.
While looking directly at him.
That's yeah.
Yeah, no, I want to see it, obviously. I would love to see it get even better against the Mammoth. But I think that might be good transition into the next 9 games of the season.
Before we get there, I want to shout out one more player, and you guys already kind of mentioned him in Scott Wedgwood. Was so close to the shutout, unfortunately. And this is not a situation that I blame on him in the slightest. 5-on-3 situation that the LA Kings end up capitalizing on. Stopped 24 of 25 shots. This coming from the guy who is going to be the starter for at least the next week or two. I want to kind of get brief opinions here on, you know, performance. I really liked what I saw from Wedgwood. Thought he was calm, cool, collected in the net. Didn't see too much stray positioning. I thought he was solid through 60 minutes.
I don't think he was tested enough for me to say that he had an outstanding game. I mean, 5-on-3s are tough at the best of times. Honestly, I do kind of – I think it was Drury and Kelly out there on that goal on the Fiala. It was Fiala, right, with the goal, right? Yeah, it was Fiala? Yeah, Fiala.
Yeah, Fiala.
It was Kevin Fiala. It looks like it was Taves, Kelly, Drury, and
– yeah, because that was the 5-on-3. I didn't love the positioning of that penalty kill in particular, because I felt like, I mean, it's hard 5-on-3, especially, but I think you need to, if you're on the penalty kill, you need to take away the cross pass for the one timer. You want to give Wedgwood the best shot at saving the puck. And I don't think the penalty kill really helped him out there. I can't say that he was tested enough. The only thing that like worries me, and this is an overall defensive scheme, and sometimes this gets goalies in trouble, especially for the Avalanche, and I mentioned on the live stream, there was a time where the Avalanche had like 10 shots and I don't think the Kings had a shot for like 7 minutes, and like, you know, really credit to Scott Wedgwood for staying in the game and everything, but you know, he wasn't tested. And if we're coming up against the Dallas Stars on Saturday, where he needs to be ready for, you know, anything that could happen in that game. But like I said, he wasn't really tested outside of a 5-on-3. But he made the saves when he needed to. That's a lot better than the 6 goals we gave up last year with Georgiev in net.
Before we get into the remaining 9 games in this 10-game segment, as Bednar likes to cut the season up into, I do want to throw it over to our wonderful sponsors in DraftKings Sportsbook. Be sure to go check them out. I'm going to throw it over to our ad read for them.
NFL fans, what's your favorite touchdown? For me, it's the next one, because with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, every touchdown could bring you closer to cashing in. From first touchdown score to anytime TD props, or the thrill of live in-game betting, every snap is loaded with opportunity. Now, Grant, I know you've got some good odds for the upcoming Broncos game this weekend.
Well, as you all know, your Broncos are not going to be playing in the U.S. They'll actually be playing abroad in Europe. But you can still bet on them with the Broncos playing the Jets, where the Broncos are heavily favored at -395. And the Jets are massive, massive, massive underdogs at +310. Spoiler alert, don't pick the Jets. If you want to bet on the over-under, it is set at 43.5. You can bet on anytime touchdown scorers like Breece Hall, RJ Harvey, Cortland Sutton, and J.K. Dobbins. Please remember, these odds are subject to change.
And please do not take any betting advice from us. Here's the best part. Bet just $5, and if your bet wins, you'll get $200 in bonus bets instantly. If I were a betting person regularly, DraftKings Sportsbook is absolutely where I'm going to place my bets. Your team hitting pay dirt pays out to you. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN to turn $5 into $200 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text H-O-P-E-N-Y 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of the Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, fees may apply in Illinois. 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bet must win to receive rewards. Minimum -500 odds required. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gambling resources, see dkng.co/audio. Now back to the show.
And we are back. Not much longer here on the episode, but do want to go ahead and briefly overview the next 9 games upcoming for the Colorado Avalanche. Just going to read off briefly what I'm seeing here on the schedule, and then we can kind of break down what we need to break down, what I imagine is going to be at least the next 2 games, which are at home. Speaking of, game 2 for the Colorado Avalanche is going to be the home opener against the Utah Mammoth. Funnily enough, this is going to be the first time we as a fan base, as a, you know, fans of NHL hockey are seeing the Utah Mammoth play as the Utah Mammoth. So this will be their season opener played in Denver, Colorado. That game will be at 7 p.m. The Avalanche do also play the Dallas Stars. So this will be the regular season return of Mikko Rantanen to Ball Arena. That's again, regular season. Oh, for the season. That's right. I keep forgetting that. Good grief. I also forget that I was not at that game. I was sick last season. So that kind of sucked. Anyway, Mikko Rantanen will make his return to Ball Arena on Saturday the 11th. Then on the 13th, the Avs are headed east to play the Buffalo Sabres on Monday the 13th. 2-day break for them. Then they will head to Columbus, Ohio to play the Columbus Blue Jackets. Then they'll head back home for a bit of a stretch to play, or not a bit of a stretch, one game, to play the Boston Bruins on the 18th. You've got the Utah Mammoth on the 21st in Salt Lake City. Then they host my original hometown, Carolina Hurricanes, on the 23rd at Ball Arena. That will be the first time that Martin Necas, Jack Drury, and Brent Burns will be seeing their former team since signing and being traded. Avalanche will then head back out east to finish their series against the Boston Bruins. And where this 10-game segment ends will be in New Jersey, where they will play the Devils. Guys, I imagine the big standouts here are going to be Dallas and Carolina, each for different reasons.
Which team do you want? The team that Mikko Rantanen was supposed to go to, or the team that or the team that got Mikko Rantanen? Because the team that Mikko Rantanen went to is an undesirable location for superstars.
God. I'm glad you got through the sentence, Grant.
Thank you.
That was applause.
There we go. No.
Gavin, you go ahead.
I was just talking about it's interesting that we play the Mammoth twice in October, once on the 9th, once on the 21st, both one at home, one away. I really like the possibility of a proper Rocky Mountain rivalry forming. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. we don't play the Kings again because there was some real hate at the end of that game. So we don't play them again until December. So unfortunately, it'll probably have simmered down by then, but you never really know. But with the Utah Mammoth, I'm just hoping and praying that the Avalanche get the first in the division and they get the wild card spot so we can just – because I see enough Utah Mammoth fans being like, oh, I don't like the Avs, but it's not like full-on hate. I want to get that to hatred levels. That's – I just want to let the little brother of the Rocky Mountains know who the boss mm-hmm. is, and it's not them.
But I'm excited to see these Utah Mammoth play under their new and for the foreseeable future current moniker. I think Denver fans have mixed feelings on the name. I'm all
right. Who cares? It's lacrosse. No one pays attention, anyways.
It's not nice. They're roommates to the Avalanche. Be nice.
How many people watch lacrosse? That's what I thought.
I think anytime the Avalanche play Dallas, it's going to be a big game. Not just because of the giant population of Dallas transplants here, but I do think just because of the rivalry with, you know, Mikko Rantanen returning to the Central, him being the reason the Avalanche did not make it further in the playoffs last year, at least the final nail in the coffin, I will say. That's always going to be a huge game. And I think that's turning into it. As much as I would love to see a rivalry forming between the Utah Mammoth and the Colorado Avalanche, I think they have a couple years to go before they become like a truly contending team that can be dangerous for that to happen. Dallas already holds that spot. And that's the one I think I'm looking forward to most. It's going to be high energy, high pace. There's a lot of emotion out there on that ice. And not just on the ice and the stands as well. And as much as, you know, you may or may not want to agree with it, like the energy in the stands has a lot to do with what happens out there as well. So yeah, that's going to be a high energy game.
Is kind of an experience that their former Arizona Coyotes never got to experience ever. So that's — no, sorry, that's a little bit of shame.
I'm more so talking about the Dallas game for that.
Damn it. I saw the hatred opportunity and I took it.
No, so I'm very excited for that one. Anytime Columbus comes into town, it always kind of tugs at my heartstrings.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. I'm excited to see Sean Monahan's, hopefully the beginning of his, what I'm hoping is a full season for him after the unfortunate injury woes he went through last year. So I'm excited to see that, or at least see the Avalanche play them and head into Columbus.
I was gonna mention this roster definitely for this first nine games are pretty tough, but thank goodness mm-hmm. that Boston has just fallen off the wagon. They're playing right now. They are, from all reports, from what I understand, are a bad team this year. So,
yep.
Got a bit of an easy bounce on the schedule in that.
Well, finally. It's only been like 25 years.
I was going to say, Louise. Talk about last nail in the coffin. Marchand leaving is kind of what I think gave them that final kick down the stairs.
And soon Pasternak to the New York Rangers.
Well, actually, Boston actually took care of business against the Capitals, though. Boston won 3-1.
Damn. I
mean, good for them.
I think the Capitals are washed too, so. That doesn't matter.
God, man, the fact that they still have Pasternak on the Boston Bruins.
It's did you see that one picture that someone tweeted about when the Minnesota Wild signed Kaprizov, and they're like, "How Bill Guerin?" And it's like a sports car parked in this like absolute ramshackle house. That's how I imagine Pasternak being on the Bruins right now.
Oh, yeah. But getting back to the Avalanche schedule here, I don't know. I don't know. Realistically, if you're the Avalanche looking at the games you have ahead, Utah is an interesting opponent in terms of how they're going to play, because they have no center quality. Like, their center quality might as well be non-existent. I mean, Logan Cooley is your first line center, McBain is your second line center, Hayton and Stenlin. They're all prospects, just aren't developed. So you should be taking care of the Utah Mammoth.
I think, well, Cooley's sick. I want to give credit to Logan Cooley. I think that guy's awesome. But Barrett Hayton kind of only developed into a really good 3C, isn't really that second line center. The prospects they do have at center that are really good just haven't arrived yet or just got drafted, so it's they're not in their prime yet.
They're still building,
but they've always played the Avs pretty obnoxiously, so it could be an interesting game.
For the 3-4 games they've played against them.
In this nine game stretch, I think I'm looking at the Avalanche to win against Utah. You got to beat the Sabres. You can't lose the Sabres.
Sabres start off every season hot.
They do.
Everyone always gets like, oh, this is the year. One month later, it is very much not the year. But so they're going to look great in that first game. What is that, the fourth game of the season? That 10:30 matinee game?
Yeah, that's a bad one. Monday. On Monday, too. I'm working, my God. Dude. Yeah. Do they want us to like forget our jobs? But anyways, Columbus is going to be tough because they're starting to finally kind of get there with Adam Fantilli. They're starting to get there with Marchenko. They're starting to get there with all their guys. They're going to be a little bit tougher. Not quite the same, but they're going to be tougher. Bruins at home, you should take care of. Mammoth, you should take care of. Hurricanes are an interesting one. They either play them really well or really terribly.
I was going to add in here, Carolina is going to be an interesting game. You talk about the emotion coming out on the ice for the Dallas series, or at least the Dallas series through the season. I imagine there's going to be a very similar feel on the ice for Carolina coming into town, just because of, you know, this is the first time you're seeing Netches and Drury and Burns in different sweaters since not being on the team anymore. And so there was
three of them.
Yeah. So there's, I think Netches might be going into that game with a something to prove attitude. Drury as well, since he was there were rumors that he requested a trade out of Carolina, finally got it. Now this is a system that he's starting to fit in well into, proving that he's doing well in the faceoff dot. He's proving to be a prominent force on the penalty kill. There's a lot to prove from those three guys with Carolina. So that this is it, Carolina games are always a mixed bag with Colorado, I've noticed.
Yeah. If you guys remember the Martin Netches audition where he had a hat trick against the Avalanche the same season he got traded to them.
We don't need to rehash that.
But
was that the same season?
It was the same season. It was the beginning.
Because he had another one the season prior. I was at that game in Raleigh. Yeah.
They were like, "Huh, write down that guy's name."
That was also the same game that was the season after Mikko Rantanen absolutely broke Jacob Slavin's ankles.
That was
slide that one in.
Yeah, McKinnon, that was sick.
That was also a game I don't remember who it was. I don't think it was Sam Girard, but it was somebody who launched a puck from the blue line.
That was McCarr. That was McCarr.
I don't think that was McCarr.
It was
that
definitely was McCarr.
The clapper from McCarr, but no, Sam Girard did just shoot, and it completely beat the goal.
That was Sam Girard.
Oh, no, yeah, he shoots it. That was not from the blue line. That was from the red line.
Yeah, the red line.
From the center line. Yeah, Kochetkov was just not paying attention. It was a goal. Anyway.
But there's fun things happen at Kane's game, so that might be some tickets for you guys to buy. But I just want to pose the question: how does the video package work for that? Are they going to have to play three different iterations for Netches, Burns, and Drury?
Well, it's at home. They're not away yet.
Oh, okay. But when that does happen, I wonder how that's going to work.
Yeah, it's probably going to be all three.
I imagine they'll do
a mega
two compilation. Like, I don't think they'll do a mega compilation. I think they do one for each. I definitely think Nexus is going to be bigger. Burns is going to be bigger. Drury's is going to be. But he did win a Calder Cup in their system. So there's that. Anyway,
back to the 9-game stretch. Hurricanes as a wild card. Don't really know what to get them from there. Avalanche always play terrible in Boston. They always do. I can't remember the last time I've seen the Avalanche win in Boston. So I'm going to say they lose. And then Devils, you should be taken care of. The Devils aren't that team that everyone thinks they are.
Yeah, the Devils are a tough one because they're, I think a lot of what problems they deal with is either injuries or still finding their identity. It's going to be interesting this season. They're definitely going in without the sparkle that they've had where everyone's like, oh yeah, the Devils, they're going to dominate the division. They're going to be the team. This is kind of the year where everyone's like, yeah, we've said that for the last 3 years and you haven't shown it. So show me something for real. And
I mean,
they're an interesting team.
They're good. But if, when I look at this roster, I see the first two lines and I go, okay, that's great. And then I see the bottom two lines and I go, what the hell is happening there? And then I go to the D and like, I see Siegenthaler with Hamilton, which makes sense because Hamilton's more of an offensive guy. Siegenthaler isn't. And then I see Luke Hughes on the second D pair and I see Brett Pesce, and Brett Pesce is more of a defensive guy and Luke Hughes is more of an offensive guy. But I look at this team and I go, but you guys just never put it together. You never find a way to actually like live up to whatever everyone says you're going to do.
Yeah. I don't know. Before we end things off here, with tomorrow or today, when this will be published, arrives, Avs fans are in for a little bit of a treat. The Avalanche announced today that they are going to be partnering with Legends Global. Legends Global and Ball Arena partnering with the Colorado Avalanche to introduce fan-friendly pricing and some new vendors for you guys for this upcoming season. So be sure when you guys are grabbing your tickets for games, maybe don't go get something to eat before the game because there will be some affordable options in arena for you. $5 items. And I'm reading this verbatim off of the article that was posted earlier today. $5 items include hot dogs, popcorn, candy, chips, fries, pretzels, and fountain soda. So your basic concessions, $5 in the arena. All fan-friendly items will be available throughout. Also, 20-ounce domestic drafts for those of you over 21 and have the ability to drink Coors Light, Coors, Michelob Ultra, and Avalanche Ale 20-ounce drinks or beers will be $10 at nearly all food stands with draft beer on the 100 and 300 levels, as well as two locations on club level. As far as new vendors go, some exciting options here.
Before you get to that, I will say, according to the 9 News article with the $5 menu, they are only available outside sections 112 and 319, and then the Colorado Social grab and go on the club level. This is according to 9 News, not myself. I just wanted to clarify for people who might just go up to any stand and be like, oh, hey, I thought this was $5.
So keep that in mind when you guys are going to games. Be sure to check it out. Feel free to reach out to us and let us know so we can report on the next podcast. As far as new vendors go, and I'm going to give some sections here so you guys know where to go. Redeemer Pizza serving their artisan pizza. Jeez, I can't speak today. Serving their artisan pizza with a homemade sauce and delicious cup and char pepperoni. Outside sections 126 and 342. Nola Jane serving Debris Po' Boy, 8-hour braised beef, lettuce, tomato, onion, mayo, and just gravy. And Dual Dog, alligator sausage, gumbo, jambalaya. So your basic New Orleans eats. Outside section, it's 303. Big Belly Barbecue, which is a name a lot of you should be familiar with, serving 20 hours. smoked brisket, available as a sandwich, or on loaded fries, hickory smoked pulled pork, available as a sandwich, or on loaded fries, beef burn-ins, hot links, smoked chicken, poblano nachos. That's my kind of food growing up in the Carolinas. Outside section 148 and 379, cool about Big Belly Barbecue is three brothers born and raised in the heart of Denver, smoking barbecue the mile highway. So get some good Denver eats outside section 148 and 379. Mexico City for some famous fried tacos, one of a kind taste with white corn tortilla, melted cheese, lettuce, and tomato. Historic landmarks that serves the Denver, Colorado community has been for over the past 65 years outside sections 118 and 330. Illegal Burger, which was a name I was kind of surprised and pleased to see. Illegal Cheeseburger, Illegal Bacon bacon Burger, Illegal Cream Cheeseburger, Illegal Spicy Chicken Sandwich, Truffle Fries, and Roasted Jalapeno Fries outside section 102. And finally, last but not least, Jake's Baby D's outside section 134, a variety of mini donuts and coffee to curb your sweet tooth. Something cool about these guys, they are making their return to Ball Arena, serving the same mini donuts fans know and love from years ago. Again, outside section 134. Unless you guys have anything else to add.
Thank goodness, by the way. Like, Ball Arena, like, the prices are one thing, and that's really nice and all. But, like, I know going to other ballparks around the U.S., you know, they always have, like, more, like, interesting places to go within the ballpark to get food. So it's nice that the Avalanche are kind of adopting some of those. It's kind of boring when every place is either a pizza or a burger or popcorn. So,
oh, for sure. Yep. That's great to hear about the food prices. I love that as someone who needs money all the time.
But, don't we all?
Don't we all? But what I'm looking out the most for are some very particular jerseys that have not been announced yet, but have been teased very heavily.
There's rumors that fans could be seeing those here within the week. I don't know how real or true those rumors are. I'm going to be asking around tomorrow to see what I can find out. But
my bank account should be on lookout right now. It's
not my bank account. There's like a little warning symbol. My bank account is. I just paid for the ski pass.
You can go into debt.
Oh, right? Gosh.
I don't want to go into debt. I already did that.
All right.
That's going to do it for today's episode. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. And for those of you listening, morning of October 9th, happy opening day at home. Super excited to see you guys all at Ball Arena cheering on the Avalanche at home for the first time this season. Before we go, Gavin, where can the people find you?
You can find me over at Avalanche Digest. Post a lot of short form content. We have an analysis up about the first game already. So, yeah, come on there and check out our stuff.
Grant, where can the people find you?
You can find me at Grant_Foster_15 on X. I tweet there sometimes. It's Twitter. It's not X. But thank you for the people who did watch the live stream while Bailey and I were hosting and had to endure the terrible microphone problems that we were having. So thank you.
I don't know why they were so bad. You sound fine right now.
I know. I don't know. But, maybe we'll do more live streams in the future. Bailey might not be as a part of that as, you know, going forward. But maybe Gavin and I can do a couple.
She's a little too cool for us now.
Yeah, she's too cool.
She's I was cool. Getting there, guys.
Segway!
Before I shout out all of my happenings, be sure to follow us over on X at Avs Morning Pod. Thank you so much to the Hockey Podcast Network for letting us do what we do. Be sure to go check them out over on X and Instagram at HockeyPodNet. And check out their website at the hockeypodcastnetwork.com. That is the hockeypodcastnetwork.com. If you're looking for something that's maybe not Avalanche related, the Hockey Podcast Network has 30 shows for all the other 31 teams in the NHL. So be sure to go get your fix over there if you're looking for another team to kind of, you know, get your knowledge up on a little bit. If you're not looking for specific team content, they do have other shows surrounding, you know, fantasy and general knowledge around the NHL. So be sure to go check out some of their shows as well. as far as I go, by the time this episode drops, the news will be live. Unfortunately, I announced last night that, last night being October 8th, that my last couple days and week at the Hockey News are numbered. I am spending my last couple weeks with the Hockey News here. In the next few, again, next week, week and a half. After that, I am the newest member of the DNVR family. I am pleased to announce that I have just joined DNVR to become their newest ABS beat reporter. So if you guys are looking for another podcast to hang out and chat with, be sure to go check out DNVR and their Avalanche page. We'd love to say hi over in the live streams and the watch parties and the off day podcasts. Would love to see you over there, but lots of cool content coming your way from DNVR and myself. But to find all of that content, be sure to go follow DNBR at DNBR_Avalanche. Be sure to go follow me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that is Bailey with two Y's. Follow me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. Guys, that's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for watching. I'm Bailey, joined by Gavin and Grant. We will see you next time here at the Avalanche Warning.